Hey, everybody. Good day. Welcome to another episode of the OIG Roundtable. Eric Rubenstein here, Senior Director of Litigation, Fraud, Waste, and Abuse Support. And I am joined by my two partners in crime, Wade McFall, retired assistant special agent in charge from the OIG's LA office, and now a manager on our SIU investigative team, and Matt Kachansky, the retired special agent in charge from the OIG and the retired Northeast UPIC director, and now our Senior Director of Payment Integrity. And, you know, of course, the very first thing I need to obviously share is that in Matt's spare time, a lot of people don't know this, but Matt is also part of Central Casting and worked for many years, as you can now see, playing the role of Phil Leotardo on The Sopranos. So if you watch The Sopranos, you will recognize Matt Kachansky, a.k.a. Phil Leotardo, minus the very dark eyebrows. So, Matt, it's good to see that you're back from Central Casting. And back to doing the work that you are good at doing.
I'm probably the only living American that's never seen that show. So
yeah,
I have seen him though in other roles.
Central Casting. I mean, he's been in every mob movie that there is. So you know, I don't know if at the end of the day the Kochanskis from the Polish side of the mob will be involved in this. But you know, certainly we're happy to. You know, find a role for you if needed in the next mob movie starring Jean Marie Loria as the
Capo de Capo
as the consigliere. So anyway, so today we want to spend some time talking. You know, last week when we did our podcast, we talked a little bit about we mentioned in passing OIG's unimplemented recommendations, and then oddly enough, shortly after we did that podcast, OIG put out its yearly hit list of unimplemented recommendations. And for those that don't know this, this we consider to be kind of a cohort to the OIG work plan. Each year, the HHS OIG, other OIGs as well, put out their list kind of the top 10 or so unimplemented recommendations. And when you look through the unimplemented recommendations that are put out, they have a cumulative list. And they have kind of a yearly hit list of things that nobody's listened to. It's basically the best way to put it. Interestingly enough, they've been putting this out since at least 2017, and there have been almost 1,200 unimplemented recommendations since 2017. And when you look across them in the aggregate, it's billions of dollars, the most recent one. And we're going to do this as a two-parter. Today, we're going to talk kind of high level. Our next OIG roundtable next week, we're going to talk a little more granularly about some of these. But in the aggregate, these are billions with a B of recommendations. There's one particular one, which we'll get into probably the next week, that talks a little bit about Medicare Advantage and risk scoring, and that's $4.2 billion alone. So there's billions of dollars out there. And again, we try not to make political statements. And while I'm not making this a political statement, when the current administration came in and they ramped up DOGE, which DOGE is formerly known as USDS, U.S. Digital Services. It was implemented actually during the Obama administration, and it was meant to identify instances where there were duplicate payments going out for things, just, you know, your general fraud, waste, abuse in government. It was renamed DOGE, but it really is USDS is what it was. And if you actually look at OIG in the aggregate, OIG's unimplemented recommendations, the unimplemented recommendations, if implemented, would have resulted in billions more in savings than what DOGE has identified. And as we all know, many of the DOGE cuts and implementations that they put into place resulted in very little money in some regards. And some contracts that were canceled had no dollar value or anything like that. So, and again, not a political statement, but you know, why reinvent the wheel in some cases? And we talk about this when we talk about SIUs and the commercial payer community. It's why reinvent the wheel when there's policies out there. So the unimplemented recommendations are kind of interesting, you know, to read. And so, Wade, you know, we've been looking at these for the past couple of days. I know that you have spent many an hour studying these deeply in preparation for this podcast, as well as the pop quiz that Matt will be giving you as your director afterwards. But, you know, you look at these unimplemented recommendations, there's nearly 1,200 of them since 2017 or so. And while some of them are policy changes that don't necessarily create a savings to a program, others do. And so looking at these unimplemented recommendations have probative value to payers, but certainly they work symbiotically with a lot of the work that comes out of the work plan, right? Because you've got the work plan may identify something, and then the OIG creates a recommendation. And what we tend to notice is that in some cases, CMS agrees. In a lot of cases, CMS doesn't agree. And that's either here nor there. We're not here to have an assessment on, right, the OIG. You know, when I got hired as an agent, and my mentor, Jason Eisengrind, used to always say, the biggest battle you're ever going to have is never going to be with the U.S. Attorney's Office, a defense attorney. It's always going to be with CMS, because the OIG wants to keep the money and CMS wants to give out the money. And so you've got this back and forth. But the thing that I think people sometimes don't always connect are these recommendations, unimplemented or implemented or agreed upon, and the work plan, and that these two things kind of work together, and they really do work to shore up the different programs. And it's not always Medicare, it's Medicaid, it could be Public Health Service, Indian Health Services, FDA, but these two things work together oftentimes.
Right, and you hit the main point, I think, is, well, a couple things, is the aggregate amounts. Like we talked about, it's up to the, I think the highest one was $4.2 billion, but there's a lot of them in between. There's a lot of them for several hundred million. There's some that were very low, like a couple thousand dollars. So I think really the key is to, you know, prioritize those and address the higher dollar ones, work on implementing those, you know, to get the most return on the dollar. The OIG often says, you know, for every dollar we spend on the office, you know, whether it be salaries or whatever, they get return of somewhere between, depending on who you talk to, $6 to $10 in return, something like that. So prioritizing these, you know, and putting somebody on trying to implement them, I know that it's not just a matter of flipping a switch, and there's probably a certain amount of effort and resources that go into implementing these, but to have 2,000 that have been worked, and, you know, somebody from OE&I or OAS worked at coming up with these the results, and if for somebody like CMS to not want to implement them for whatever, I'm sure it's generally going to be resource reasons. But again, some of them, a lot of the work has been done already. So you've already paid for OAS or OE&I to do the work to identify these, you know, overages or overpayments or systematic failures, whatever it is. Just like OI used to do the MIRs. It's similar to the management implication reports, where if we would see something that systematically needs to be changed, we could make those recommendations. A lot of those were the same. A lot of them didn't get implemented for whatever reasons. But I think going back to this, there's such a large amount of money. And as you said, there's a difference between OI or OIG in general and CMS. But basically, you got to look at it as like we're all on the same team. We're trying to save the taxpayers' dollars and implementing these actions. Again, even though it's going to take some resources to do that, it's not a matter of flipping a switch. But with these kind of numbers at stake, it's really something that has to be looked at. Prioritize them. Excuse me. Look at the big ones, the billion-dollar ones or the several hundred million, and try and get them implemented just to have that savings in the long run.
Yeah, and I think the piece of the puzzle of this is that investigators sometimes, but particularly in leadership, are spending so much of their day trying to just reconcile the work that they're doing that there's never really an opportunity to kind of get ahead of things. And that's where I think looking at the work plan and these unimplemented recommendations have some good value. I know that when I first came here from the OIG, one of the first questions that Jean Marie asked me was how do you use the work plan? She was very interested in the work plan. And my response to her was, at the Office of Investigations, I knew the work plan and I looked at it probably twice in my career. Maybe, you know, I would look at it, but never really read through it because we were busy attacking the fraud that we were finding or using. It wasn't really work plan centric. Whereas I think from an SIU perspective or a payer perspective, the work plan, I mean, from the provider perspective, it's certainly telling you, hey, providers, this is what we're looking at. So clean your house, right? So the provider should be looking at the work plan from that perspective. But from the payer perspective, it certainly makes sense to look at the work plan to say, hey, what does OIG think is important to the solvency of the programs, and kind of, you know, look at that. So Matt, you know, it always comes down to resources. There are never enough people. There's never enough budget. There's never enough hours. There's never enough of anything. I know that if you had your druthers, you would have 10 more of whatever Matt Kachansky needs, or, you know, whatever that may be. And that just doesn't happen. So the question then becomes, how do you streamline your ability to do the work? And I think that the work plan and these unimplemented recommendations, it's kind of like on a silver platter where you're finding, you know, here are the things that are important. Let's focus on them.
Yeah. And, you know, you're talking about just a couple of those resources. The OIGs put out multiple reports, semi-annual reports, where they talk about things that they've done that 6 months, the reports that they've issued, the audits that they're conducting, the studies that they're doing, whether they've been finished or not. All of them are in those semi-annual reports. That's another resource. Another is you talk about the work plan. I'll talk about that in a minute in terms of what we do as a contractor for our clients. There's also the top program vulnerabilities. Every year, every OIG puts out those, and it's a roadmap to issues with, usually it's claims adjustments, claims administration, best practices that need to be put in place on an operational level related to CMS or a federal agency, but can be translated to the Medicaid MCOs, the Medicare Advantage plans, and things like that. And then there's also the unincorporated recommendations, the unimplemented recommendations that you talked about. All of those things are resources to the general public and should be looked at. They don't take a lot of time to look at them. They're very black and white. Each of those unimplemented recommendations, paragraph each, bang, bang, bang.
And in fact, so what I just put up on the screen for everybody to see is, you know, this is off of the website where you could see 1,178 unimplemented recommendations. And the great part is you can look at these by report, the details of recommendations. There's a whole bunch of filters that you can use. But, you know, the thing that's interesting to note is, as we've always mentioned, is report type is audit or evaluation. There's nothing from the Office of Investigations, because the Office of Investigations, we were criminal investigators. We're following the fraud based upon known patterns and, you know, things of that sort, right? So you've got audit, Office of Audit Services, and evaluation, Office of Evaluation and Inspection. And those divisions work a little bit differently than the Office of Investigations, right? Office of Evaluation Inspections are doing kind of empirical analyses, testing the veracity of the programs and where there may be program weaknesses. Office of Audit Services are typically doing targeted reviews. This, you know, unfortunately, what winds up happening is that those targeted reviews are typically on a facility or a provider or someone that's receiving money from HHS, even in a grant. And what ultimately an OAS study does is it identifies an overpayment, and it is a piece of the watchdog over the HHS broader scheme. But unfortunately, what happens is the recipients of that money become the unintended cannon fodder, right? Because they're doing a study, an audit on a hospital provider, a grant, and then identifying that monies were paid inappropriately. It's basically an editorial on the program that it's testing, but they're using the implementation of it on that provider or that recipient. So it is important to look at those things, but you're 100% right. You've got to look at them.
Yeah.
Because there's going to be actionable information about something. At the minimum, on the payer side, it's going to be a, hey, are we studying? Are we investigating? Are our policies consistent with what is out there on the Medicare side? Do we have a policy that's totally askew from Medicare or CMS? And then more importantly, it's, hey, obviously someone at the OIG has seen the cream rise to the top. Are we having the same problems, right? So this is one of those examples where looking at your data is going to be your kickoff point, right? So, you know, kind of as we you know, piece this together, and then we'll talk a little bit more in depth next week. But Matt, this is one of those examples where when you're looking at either an OIG unimplemented recommendation, OIG work plan matter, this is one of those instances where you've got to go back to your data team and say, hey guys, hey gals, are we seeing these things? Because obviously if it's in OIG's work plan or recommendation, it is the cream has risen to the top.
Yes. And every year for our clients, we give them a work plan ourselves, like based on the data and the things we've seen in these reports. These are the issues we're going to be focusing on in the coming year. And it's based on where we find the vulnerabilities in the data in relation to these reports. And then we work with those plans to try to implement, you know, the recommendations of change that will allow us to then say we've got a savings for you as well as the money we brought back for the past conduct. And that's how we work with our folks. And it's not like it's rocket science. Some of these things are coordination of benefits, duplicate payments, some policies that need to be implemented, edits that need to be in the right place.
Right.
They're very simple, not simple, but straightforward corrections that need to be made, both at the plan level and with the OIG at the, you know, the agency level.
Right. And Wade, I want to have you wrap up, you know, as we kind of run out of time, but, you know, when you're looking at some things that are policy related, then it's less person power resource needed. And I think this gets back to when you talked about at the OIG, we would do these management implication reports, right? Which is where we found a program vulnerability or a weakness. This is kind of in the same vein. When we did it at the OIG from office investigations, we were doing it from an investigative perspective where there may have been nothing known about this. But, you know, kind of parlaying off of what Matt said, some of these may, not that these may be simple fixes, but when you're talking about ROI and manpower or person power allocation of resources, some of these are things where it's just a matter of tweaking a policy or implementing a new edit. And so that frees people up because now it's not necessarily something that works on the SIU or the payment integrity piece, it's policy, medical policy, right? So you can see from a management perspective, and you're managing people now, and at the OIG did it, when you can have something that can be implemented that doesn't implicate person power, it could be a half a win.
Right. And it is like primarily those two areas that you pointed out. It's policy, which has a overarching kind of long-term effect. But I think maybe even more so, and probably is less resource intensive, is making sure those edits are correctly written, correctly placed, and having, you know, quality data scientists, statisticians, whoever are the ones that are really implementing those edits, making sure that they're effective and their purpose, what is intended, is actually working and they're placed in the right sequence of events during the claim submission and all this stuff. But that's really the key, and again, I'm not a coder, so, but it's less resource intensive in the long run, where one properly placed edit can save you millions, potentially billions of dollars. So that's really right. The key there. Take away.
Right. Yeah, it is interesting because we see these every year. We see these unimplemented recommendations, and you're like, why aren't these being implemented? And you know, oftentimes you have to get very deep into the report to read why, for example, CMS might have disagreed. And some of that disagreement may be, in CMS's mind, it's entirely founded, right? Because they're saying we're not agreeing with it. But, you know, you have to read that to understand, is there something where CMS is saying, hey, OIG, you didn't apply this properly? Or, no, we have another piece of this puzzle that's missing. So you have to fully understand kind of that 360-degree view. But look, I think next week we'll talk about a couple of these implementations that were not these recommendations that weren't implemented. We'll talk about a few of them. I mean, one of them that stands out is a $4.2 billion one, which no surprise is connected to Medicare Advantage and risk scoring. We're seeing that's huge on the radar. So, you know, we'll see where that goes. But, you know, it's something I think we, you know, we want to delve a little bit more into it. So that'll be next week. But, you know, you got to look at these things. These unimplemented recommendations could have great value to a payer. And they do work symbiotically with the yearly work plan, because the unimplemented recommendations tie back to a study, an audit, or an evaluation. There's a code, there's a number, there's a study number, and that ties back to the work plan. So these two things work, they work symbiotically together. So we'll continue this conversation next week. So wait, Matt, always good to have your thoughts on this. And as always, we enjoy the interaction that we've been getting with people on some of these. The past couple of weeks, we've gotten some pretty good interaction, particularly with the work plan updates, and more importantly, with this unimplemented recommendations summary that's been put out. We've gotten some feedback on that, so we appreciate that. And again, you can always get our newsletter every Friday, comes to your inbox, and our LinkedIn Lives, previous recordings of the LinkedIn Lives, as well as previous recordings of the OIG Roundtable, can be found on our YouTube channel. Just go to YouTube, look for Advise Health or OIG Roundtable. You'll find us. You can subscribe, get those every week, also on LinkedIn. So we enjoy the interaction, and we'll talk about this again a little bit more next week. And until then, we'll see you on the next OIG Roundtable. Thanks, everybody.
Thank you all.